Beginning last week, we had initially identified two cases of E. coli, which is O157H7. That's a particular strand of E. coli that produces a toxin that can be dangerous to the kidneys. It affects more younger children and older adults. Since then, there were three other cases with the same genetic type, so for a total of five cases. And then kind of later in the week's progress, there were three other cases that look linked from an epidemiologic standpoint, but we're still confirming it on the genetic testing. When this arose, the local health authorities immediately started the investigation and escalated to the state. The state is involved. Should this look like a supply chain contamination that's coming from contaminated food products outside the state, I imagine the federal resources would become involved as well. Two of the patients, the youngest two, are hospitalized and remain hospitalized. The remainder of the cases recovered without incident or problems. The presentation of illness with this particular type of disease is it's a diarrheal illness, frequently associated with blood or mucus in the stool. The problem, again, is the toxin produced by this particular strain of E. coli that attacks the kidneys, leading to a very significant inflammatory response and problem from that. Of interesting note, sometimes treating with antibiotics in this condition can precipitate the complications, which can add some challenge. Now, the additional challenge from a health department standpoint is if this were a single source, say a restaurant or something that we could quickly find, that would be easier on our part. However, as the investigation's progressed, it looks like there are cases that don't have a lot in common, so it's quite an investigative effort right now. That's the basic summary. We don't have a source identified at this time.
What triggers the health department's attention?
Sure.
The volume cases?
Right, good question. There are several reportable diseases that health providers are required to identify for us and feed to us. This was the regular surveillance system that worked well and worked quickly. So these were identified at a local hospital, and then made known to us.
Any idea historically when the last time this sort of situation manifested itself?
Locally, I don't recall. These are sporadic cases. You hear about them nationally. There was different sources: spinach, beef, strawberries, even. And so, again, they're sort of these sporadic cases. But I don't remember the last time locally we had something like this.
And so, no commonalities other than two relatives that are.
Right. We were hopeful that there were some commonalities early on, but as cases got added in and the investigation continued, it really kind of blew that apart. So it's a tricky puzzle that people are trying to piece together from, what are the common links. So I think the initial thought is that it's some kind of supply chain contamination at this point, but like I said, we don't have that confirmed or locked down.
What are the common links that you've ruled out? Are they in close proximity to one another, or what are some of the common links that are ruled out for you guys?
We were optimistic before the cases expanded that we could say that it was a single restaurant, but like I said, that quickly sort of went away. So at this stage, and again, this is very preliminary without the full investigation, but I think we're looking away from a single source restaurant to more supply chain issue.
And are you concerned at all for the public? Is there anything that you want them to know as far as their safety, how they prepare foods?
Sure, these things sort of flare up and then go away. But as long as it's out there, if there's other contaminated food, that does poses somewhat of a risk. These are, not overwhelming cases. It's not like influenza that infects a wide range of people, but making sure that food's cooked to the proper temperature, make sure that the vegetables and fruits are washed After handling raw meats, make sure that your hands are washed and the surfaces are clean. You don't have to fumigate your house or, pour bleach all over everything. But add, copious amounts of hot water would work fine.
And I heard you say initially that this particular strand really affects the infants or the elderly. And so you said the other three cases are doing all right.
Yes, ma'am. The complications of the infection, they all got a diarrheal illness. That's, common for this type of infection. But the complications, the one specifically involving the kidneys, that seems to be more directed towards infants or the elderly.
Do you know how they're doing, their condition?
I have not heard any press release from Texas Children's at this time. So.
Thank you.
When do you consider it an outbreak?
Anytime you have an unusual cluster of cases that you don't expect, that technically could be considered an outbreak. So this is an unusual cluster of these cases. Although this is not, widespread or a large one, but I think we would say that it's probably a small outbreak.
How extensive is your search when doing this, especially with the cases that you have? What is kind of the procedures that y'all go through, or what do y'all look as far as maybe where these people ate, what were their last meals? Can you tell us how extensive a search like that might be?
Sure. There's a lot of phone calls, a lot of questions. There's kind of standard procedures that have been developed for this. And so you start identifying the initial cases, building your database from there. And then as other cases are brought in and considered, they go through a long list of directed questions with them as well. And then it sort of expands in concentric circles as you get more and more information. Lots of phone calls. It keeps people quite busy running through all the permutations of this, because like I said, it could be any number of food sources.
What would you say to parents that are concerned watching the story, thinking that they need to that they want some type of response?
Sure. So the most cases of diarrhea in the United States are viral. An overwhelming majority are viral. And those, run their course. The most important thing is to make sure you stay hydrated. The subset that are bacterial, there's a, even a smaller section that is this particular form of bacteria. So the thing that I would say as a parent or a physician is to say, if you've got a child that has a significant diarrheal illness, especially one associated with a fever or blood or mucus, that's probably worth a medical visit, and to just make sure that it's not something more significant. But your standard, non-bloody, no fever, regular diarrhea is probably just the same regular diarrhea that it always was. It's great, great topic.
In all applications, remain hydrated.
Right, right.
Are we concerned that there are going to be more cases, or that there have been cases that just haven't been reported?
There's kind of been a second survey, where we contacted all the local hospitals to say, can you double check and make sure that there's nothing? And so that has been done. So I don't know of any new cases on the horizon at this point.
And like you said, when it comes to treatment, sometimes, it makes it harder to treat it. Can you guys talk about that?
Right. There's a phenomenon known when we're treating this particular strand of E. coli, that sometimes the use of antibiotics seems to precipitate some of the complications. So from a physician standpoint or medical standpoint, that adds a little additional challenge. So it's a lot of aggressive supportive therapy.
You don't expect additional cases, at least out of this particular group, because of the way that the symptoms and the illness have evolved?
I'm optimistic that hopefully we don't see additional cases. I think the concern, from the people doing the investigation is if this is a supply issue or supply contamination, that opens the door to, additional cases or outside the Brazos Valley. So I'm sure the state is definitely has their antennas up to see, you know, would any contaminated food cause illness outside of this area.
And should food providers also take some additional attention, additional steps?
Well, I think if the food providers follow the guidelines established, it should be fine. You know, there's, you know, that's the reason for all the restaurant inspections and everything else. So.
Do we know if they ate at a restaurant or cooked food themselves? Do we know that?
Well, everybody's eaten at restaurants and everybody's had food prepared for themselves in this cohort. So, you know, there's not just a single thing that we can grab hold of at this point.
And I guess how long would it take for them to get some sort of symptoms from this?
You know, that brings up a very good point. The incubation period can vary. It can be up to several days before you start showing symptoms. So a lot of times when people get sick, they blame the last thing they ate as the source. But that's often not the case. It could go back several days. So.
If the symptoms are caught early, how long can the recovery take?
Well, the routine course of the illness is that it's a 3 to 5 day illness and goes away, mostly on the shorter side. It's rare that it goes 5 days. If you develop the complications, the kidney complications, then it can be a very prolonged and difficult recovery. Like I said, the two children have been hospitalized for, I think, over a week at this point.
How common are the kidney complications?
Not very common. Thank goodness. I mean, it's a significant complication to get, but it's a minority of the cases that actually occur.
Can you describe what it does in your body? Does it stay like in a certain area, or does it go throughout the bloodstream? What does it do?
All right. So the right now, if we went into your intestines and pulled out a sample, you're going to have E. coli in there. So everybody in the room is littered with E. coli inside of them. This strain, the 0157H7, has a genetic tool that it got from another organism that produces a toxin called Shiga toxin. That toxin has the ability to bind the lining of the kidneys, and when it binds, it causes a lot of inflammation and some initial damage. The big inflammatory response from the body then sort of complicates the issue. It causes a breakdown of your red blood cells. You use up a lot of your clotting factors. It causes problems with platelets. It plugs the tubes in the kidneys and leads to, you know, the kidney failure. So although the bacteria typically can remain inside the intestine, the bacteria don't have to get into the bloodstream. It's the toxin that gets produced that causes a lot of these complications. In rare cases, the bacteria can get in the bloodstream, which is another severe complication, but it's, again, not as common for that. And after this press conference, we've got some raw meat for everybody to taste in the back if you'd like.
How common is this strand, throughout the country?
It's uncommon because you don't hear about this except for, these dramatic presentations. And I think the thing that is very impactful with these cases, again, is the predilection for the severe issues to be involved with children.
Can you speak to what ages the children are, or are they under that 5 years?
They're both under 5 years of age.
Okay. And the other patients?
The other patients were college age or older.
And they're all, none of them are hospitalized?
No, none required hospitalization, all resolved.
Never did?
Never did.
Okay. Is it easy to test for, this strain, or kind of, if someone thinks that they may have it, I mean, obviously go to the doctor, but how do they test for that to be able to confirm? I know that there are, 8 cases pending. We don't know for sure, right? I mean, so how does that get tested?
Right, so there's three that we're still waiting on the genetic testing. This is, again, a great dinner topic, but basically you poo in a bucket, right? And then they take a sample of that and put it on, you know, a petri dish and do the all the stuff that the standard, you know, microbiologists do, and there's genetic sequencing and genetic testing can be done to identify, is this that particular strain? So this is something that doesn't, you don't get back immediately. It's not a, you know, 30-minute test. This is something that sometimes takes a day or more to confirm. Well, so if we're concerned that this is a, you know, a E. coli 0157H7 infection, right? A lot of it is just supportive care. You sort of let the disease run its course as long as there's not the complications. If you develop hemolytic uremic syndrome, which is this bad problem with the kidneys, that's a lot more aggressive therapy, sometimes requiring dialysis, requiring intensive support of the blood pressure. Frequently these people get admitted to the intensive care unit. So it's a big deal if you develop the complication.
And do we believe this is just here locally, or is that still to be determined with, you know, talking with the state? And
I spoke with some of the state representatives yesterday afternoon, and they were not aware of any cases outside of this geographic area.
Okay.